about a half an hour. Mark Cassie is going to join us, hour three, and Scully and Papo Morales. So lots to do this morning, and I'll keep slipping in little news tidbits between visits. For instance, we won't be able to do it today, but we'll certainly probably start with Dr. Allday tomorrow, and I imagine Shug will contribute tomorrow as well to pay tribute to Dr. Lavin. Gary Lavin at 83 passed on Saturday, and you know, one of the real big names in his generation of veterinary service. If you haven't seen the tributes that started to pour in Saturday evening and into yesterday, you're going to see just everybody lining up to pay tribute to Dr. Lavin, and we'll do it appropriately tomorrow. And I think Shug is quoted in one of the obits that I saw. And if we're going to mention some passings, Cesario as well. Word came from Japan that Cesario at 19, and there isn't anybody that watched that inaugural American Oaks that wasn't blown away. It was one of the more remarkable, not just North American, debuts, or however you want to characterize that. Watching anybody that watched that broadcast from Hollywood that day, watched her warm up and basically run off. She basically ran a race before they ever put her in the gate, and then she proceeded to just romp. Just amazing. And I've got to find the Vic Stauffer call. I'm sure it did justice to that performance by Cesario. But she's been not just a wonderful race filly and mare, she has been a tremendous producer in Japan. And I'll let Sid on Wednesday, we'll let Sid talk about her sons, because she's produced at least a couple of stallions. So those were two passings I wanted to mention. And the rest of the news will slip in between visitors. And Rich Migliori is standing by. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I completely forgot, even though we texted last night, and I'm just finishing the stalls in the barn, and I'm going to bring the dogs up to the house while I talk to you. Come on, dogs. Let's go. How are you?
I'm good. I've had a busy morning with Andy Beyer and Jimmy Bell just now from Godolphin. And they were certainly owners of the weekend with the three stake wins. Rich, there was so much going on over the weekend. You doing America's Day at the Races, and between the Oaklawn coverage and everything in New York, no shortage of significant performances, and fold in the Gulfstream action, big weekend.
Oh, it really was. And, great to see Monomoy Girl back. Mystic Guide was, you want to talk about a horse. It was a good three-year-old, but really grew up. What a great performance from him. Essential Quality, he delivered Greatest Honor. It was a really tremendous weekend of racing. Really fortunate to be covering it. And hold on 1 second, Steve. I'm just getting these dogs in the house. Okay, we're good. it's raining out now, too.
Yeah, here, too.
Yeah, but no, really, at the heart of it, we're fans. I mean, that's how we all got involved with the sport, being fans, and then blessed to, be able to make a living, a life out of it. So, it was fun covering the races this weekend.
Well, we can actually let's step in New York portion for a minute, and Mr. Buff just kind of smile when you watch him run.
Oh, he's you know, he's like a throwback kind of horse. I think it was so appropriate he won the Stymie. Because he's like, you know, in some respects, the modern era type of Stymie, you know. So, you know, a horse that just shows up, brings his lunch pail, goes to work every single time. And, you know, the long relationship I had with the, you know, Chester and Mary Broman and John Kimmel, and knowing the whole family, having ridden the grandfather and, you know, Friends Lake and, you know, just incredible. Actually, the great-grandmother, Auntie Spend, right? So, you know, it's fun. I get a big kick out of it. And John had a good weekend. He had a first-timer win, too, on Saturday.
Yep. And well, and also, there was he had the maiden... The maiden that won was mid card, but then in the nightcap, I thought maybe that horse had a look. Electric Youth, the 11, I thought might have been showed some hints, you know, and had some sibling strength and ran okay, ran an even fifth, got an education going three quarters. But in fact, should mention that was Bob Valeri with the Laura Condisco Bellamy Road filly, Laura's Bellamy, that won wire to wire with Manny.
Yeah, man. How about Manny? Was like super aggressive all weekend. He was, you know, putting everything either on the lead or right in the game out of the gate. Like, even with Mr. Buff, you know, you're on the best horse, take no prisoners. You know, I was. You know, like handicapping and looking at things and figuring, you know, talking points, how you're going to present races. You know, John had made such a point of talking about Mr. Buff not taking him out of his rhythm. And I was thinking they might, like, let the horse inside of him, his name's escaping me, the one that Dylan Davis rode for Broad Actress, go. Because John was like, well, you know, I like him to get in his rhythm. We don't, you know, when we rush him, it seems like he stops. And then they blasted off right out of the gate. So, you know, before the race, I actually was thinking if they let that horse alone, because that horse ran well chasing the entire way. But they didn't. They didn't take any prisoners. And that's what you do with the best horse. Don't mess around. You know, just kind of pull everybody into the race and bottom them out, you know?
You know, focus on Manny for a second. And because I saw some people dumping all over him over the weekend. That somehow he's you know he I saw somebody suggest that you know when everybody comes back from Florida, you know that you know switching away from him is somehow going to be a big powerful angle. I don't understand why you know what. What he's doing that would raise ire of players.
I don't understand that either. I don't see that at all. I see a young kid who's riding hard, aggressive. You know, listen, all riders go through periods. You know, you have times you're just not riding as well as other times. You know, your confidence wanes a little bit. You tend to second guess, and as a rider, you can't second guess because things happen so quickly. You have to be decisive. And the reason guys become indecisive is because, you know, they've made a mistake and they feel like they're getting criticized. And, like, I go back to people say, oh, that guy's afraid to come through on the inside. He's not afraid from a physical perspective to come through on the inside. And I'm just talking in general terms here. But that if he gets stopped or he has to check or he gets trapped, that, you know, the connections are going to be down on him. And years ago, it was even worse when you had all the, you know, metropolitan area papers writing, you know, a synopsis of the races every day. And, you know, John Pizin and those guys would say, oh, you know, McLeary got trapped on the inside and was the best horse. And you'd go to get your coffee in the morning, and the guy in the coffee shop would say, hey, what happened in the fourth race yesterday? And then you'd go get your racing form at the candy store, and the guy would say, hey, what happened in the fourth race yesterday? You're hearing it from everybody, you know. So it's when guys are worried about the repercussions of a decision they make, and the greatest gift the trainer can give a rider is, hey, you know, like this horse's habits, he may like to be, you know, outside a little more than inside. He may wait on horses when he hits the front. He may want to lug in a little, lug out, and then let the guy do his job. You know, you can't micromanage to the point where you're in a rider's head. he's going to make mistakes then. But I don't see that with Manny. I think he's riding great. I think there are several guys riding tremendous here this winter. I think that Trevor McCarthy and Jorge Vargas coming at, from Maryland have been riding terrific. Trevor, he reminds me so much of his father, and in some respects myself, taller rider, got to work hard at it, work to keep his weight down, but that kid wants it. I mean, he's got the attitude, the mindset of a champion, and when I say that, and we touched on it last week with Tony Black, when I call somebody a race rider, that's the, for a jockey, that's the best compliment I can pay you. You're a race rider because you're doing the extra. You're going the extra mile. You're leaving no stone unturned to be the best you can be. You're not just out there, riding around in a circle. You're really honing your craft. And I see that with that kid. He's got the mindset of a champion. And being a champion and striving to be leading rider is a very hard thing. Again, it's one thing to be a jockey. It's another thing to be a race rider. And because every single race you're putting more than 100% into it, and it's debilitating physically, it's debilitating mentally, and it's a lonely place because you're so focused on one thing that it's just not an easy lifestyle. And I don't know if I'm even doing it justice what I'm saying, but if you want to be great, you've got to work harder than everybody else. And I see a kid that's willing to do that. I get a kick out of watching him.
Well, and, since you mentioned Trevor, and we should fold in, for those that haven't seen, Trevor and Katie Davis trying to garner support and signatures for having the Gaming Commission do something on an emergency basis, or at least initiate whatever it's going to take to get that nonsensical rule off
what
the books.
What a senseless rule and ridiculous. I know, like, I'll read stuff sometimes and people say, well, NYRA's got to change. It's not a NYRA rule. It's a state gaming commission rule. So the NYRA has nothing to do with it. Their hands are tied. But it seems to me that should be fixed and, quickly. Not something that they drag their feet on. People make a lot about, brothers riding Jose and Irad together and stuff. If you watch Irad's ride on Fearless and he went after Performer, aggressively around the turn and kind of got first run on him, caught him, I won't say napping, but he had, Performer had no momentum and put himself, his brother in a difficult situation, an uncomfortable, position. All you have to do is watch that and go, know how hard they're trying to beat each other. But that being said, I mean, there's summers they live together in Saratoga, they're brothers. You would think then the rule would have to apply in a similar situation that way. So either just do away with it, and because it's ridiculous. I mean, they take so much pleasure in beating each other. And it has to hurt them, because no matter what, if you're coupled, even if one is legitimately 20-1 and the other is legitimately 5-1, they're going to take more money than they should. And there are people that don't want their horses coupled because maybe they are going to wager on them.
No, I mean, it penalizes, it penalizes players. And it's just, and it actually, it penalizes NYRA too, because it reduces the betting interests. I mean, that part of it is, just...
nonsensical.
Exactly. No, it does. But the problem is going to be that you've got regulatory. I think that their hands are tied. That they've got to do the normal process where a rule change introduction is offered, and then there's a commentary period, 90 days or whatever, and it. There's a whole, the whole procedural element that's inhibiting this.
It's ridiculous. It's silly. And listen, I'm not familiar with who's on the Gaming Commission. I know for years the New York State Boxing Commission, had Floyd Patterson, and a former boxer on basically the commissioner. I was used to be neighbors with Arthur Marchanti Sr., one of the great referees, fight refs of all time. He did Ali Frazier, you know, like he told me the story about they had three referees on hold, and he had to stay in the city. He worked for Chock Full of Nuts. He went to the athletic club and worked out and took a shower, and then he got the call, like, you know, an hour before that night of fighting started at the Garden, like, hey, you got the tab for Ali Frazier, and then hustled over to the Garden. Because I guess back then they would really keep it in the dark, they, you know, I guess not wanting someone to try to get to a ref or something. But and he, you know, he would show me fight films, and I would, he'd come to my house, and I'd show him racing films, and we'd talk about it. And what a gentleman, a really class individual. And he was amazed. He asked me how many times a year does the gaming or the racing commission at the time convene to look at, you know, race tapes and stewards' decisions. And I said, as far as I know, I don't think they have formal meetings on, you know, on any regular basis about that kind of stuff. And he was amazed at that. He said four times a year, the state boxing commission gets together. And if there was, you know, the judge's scoring card was, they thought out of line, they would have him in and question it. If they thought a ref didn't, adjudicate a fight fairly, or, you know, let things go on that shouldn't have went on, he was on the carpet and asked, why did you let this happen? Why did that happen? Why did you penalize this guy for that but not that guy? And he said, you know, the amount of money that boxing brings into the state of New York is minuscule compared to the amount of money that racing brings into the state of New York. And he couldn't believe that there was more oversight seemingly on boxing than racing.
Now, this is a blind switch for me. So I will bypass much conversation.
And again, this is my knowledge of it. I'm not saying I know all.
The way in which. You know, the way in which these things are interpreted, and I've brought Ed Martin on for this to discuss, the way in which, whether it's accreditation for stewards, whether it's the way in which, the RCI organization, there's a lot of convoluted elements. And in fact, I had Ed on about this before the, right when the thing came to a head, when it was first discovered, and Ed explained, some of the procedural aspect.
Steve, since we're just like kind of, it's in a similar vein, but something that's always kind of bothered me, appeals years ago were you didn't appeal. You got your days, you took them. And you go back to Ron Turcotte not riding Secretariat up in Canada in his last start. And it just didn't happen. You didn't undermine the steward's authority. It was a very respectful thing. And then it became fashionable to start appealing. And a lot of guys, worked the system. I did it when I rode. You work the system. You put them off till it's a more convenient time for you. I used to actually like to get suspended around Christmas time because guys couldn't get mad at you for not riding then. They said, I can't ride. You work the system, and as much leeway as you get, you're going to take it. And I just think that, even that, and riders now probably get mad at me, but I don't care. I'll say it. If a guy goes to appeal, it should be dismissed out of hand. No, we're not allowing your appeal. And then you have to hire an attorney. So it's going to cost you money to put an injunction in to get the appeal. And then hear that appeal quickly, within 2 weeks, within a week. Okay, you want to appeal, it just costs you $2,000 to get the attorney to file the appeal that was dismissed by the steward. Not 3 months, not 6 months, not a year later. And believe me, guys will stop appealing unless they absolutely believe they were wrongly suspended. And most of the time, guys deserve their suspensions. And on that vein, how does a guy, right, you're heading head for the lead at the 8th pole or 16th pole, and you switch your stick to the left hand, and you come out and you brush this horse, you beat him a nose, they take you down, and they give you 3 days. Another guy is 4 or 5 wide going into the far turn. Everybody's still in hand, and he starts squeezing the field down so he's not 4 or 5 wide. He makes 2 or 3 guys check and get out of there. All right, he gets 3 days. That's the same sentence for jaywalking as it is for assault and battery. You got one where a guy is in control of the situation, and he makes a decision to squeeze guys. And another one is a competitive, you know, in-the-moment brush foul that's not dangerous. One's dangerous, one's not. I never understood that. It doesn't seem like they really, you know, fit the crime and the punishment. I've never understood that.
I was going to save that conversation about the state DQ. Mark Cassie's actually on in hour 3, but I was going to have Tony talk about it on Thursday. I don't know if you saw. Did you see the backstretch?
You know, I didn't really. I saw it once.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to comment it because I didn't look at it close.
When you get a chance, go watch it. I mean, it's preposterous. It's just, you know, incidental, you know, situation that absolutely had. I mean, if you're, I can't even say foul is a foul. We'll let Cassie frame it, and when you get a chance, I'm curious your thoughts.
I'll definitely watch it. Like as a rider, as a trainer, an owner, somebody wagering on the races, it just gets frustrating when you see things happen. And I'll speak from a rider's point of view. Like, you know, the reason years ago when I ripped the phone out of the wall in Saratoga, the famous incident. That was on, I think, on a Wednesday. And on Monday, I was on a filly for Phil Gleaves. I was in front about a 16th, you know, 70 yards to run. And another filly was running by me. And you'll see sometimes, especially two-year-olds, if they're more out towards the middle of the track rallying, if they hit the front, I've never been able to figure out what it is. And I've gone out there, and I've walked, and I've looked. It's almost like their vision, their line of vision catches something, and they'll tend to jump back to their left lead and take a step in, like almost like they spotted something near the winner's circle in that direction. And again, I've never been able to figure out what it is. But Mark Gidsey was on a filly, and she was running by me. I was beat. I was going to be second. And she did that. She like her head kind of came up, her ears went up, she jumped back to her left lead, ducked in, and broadsided me. And then beat me a length and a half. So they put up the inquiry. I didn't claim foul. And, you know, I said, yeah, Judge, she bothered me as she was running by me. And they left it official. That was the right call. It was the best horse won. I was going to be second. Then one of the stewards came down to the jock's room afterward and said, maybe we couldn't take that down. The best horse won. It didn't affect the outcome. I said, Judge, that's the right call. Well, on Wednesday, I won on Silver Squire for John Kimmel, came from last. Brushed the horse as I was going by him because he was awkward changing to his right lead. Pulled off that horse, won by 5 lengths. That horse was second, and they took me down. So, you know, and that's when I lost my mind and I ripped the phone out of the wall and I got a heavy fine for cursing out the stewards. And it was, you know, it wasn't one of my finer moments. But it's the inconsistency that gets people. If you know on a daily basis this will come down, then believe me, riders will rise to that line and not go over it. But if you don't know, and it's a gray area, it actually creates a more dangerous environment for riders because I'm never quite sure how far this guy will go. I'm never quite sure how far I can go. And you can't really trust where those boundaries are. And that creates a more dangerous situation for riders. And believe me, the stuff with out of the gate, oh, well, it was out of the gate. Yeah, sometimes a horse will just make a hard left or right that you can't avoid, but you can still make an effort. And it would be a lot cleaner if guys knew they were definitely more responsible for what happened leaving the gate, because guys are definitely more capable of keeping them straighter than they do. If I get shut off 3 or 4 times leaving the gate because the guy, well, it was out of the gate, because everybody leans on that now, and it's nonsense. As a former rider, I know you can control it more. Well, when next time my horse makes a left or you know, takes a step one way or the other, go ahead. I'm the one getting bothered all the time. Now I'm going to bother everybody else. And you created a much more dangerous situation than it should be.
Now, that's appropriate added context. It's always difficult, you know, when it's occurring in places that they don't typically look at, and you know, where there isn't obvious issues on the pan shot. Then you start getting into you, and you're going to see with this. You've also got a fairly obscured view. You don't have a complete clear view when it comes to the head-on. So there were some moving parts. We'll let Cassie sound off. I think.
Well, in this day and age, too, there's no reason not to have camera angles that are
you
clear and concise. Yeah, I mean,
right.
it's come on. You know, you can see the lunar rover on Mars as clear as you could look at your right hand. I mean,
That's funny you say that. I saw this morning on Twitter somebody put up a picture. There was a cut of a picture from Mars, and then there was a picture of a bank robbery, and whoever it was who put it up made that exact same point. He says we can see rock formations on Mars, and then here's your typical bank surveillance camera. it looks like pixels. You can barely, you know, it looks like somebody with a hoodie. That's all you can tell.
That's funny. I got to go to Twitter and look.
I'll find it for you. It's pretty funny. It came across just like literally hours ago. Let's talk a couple before we wrap. I've got Mike Stidham's going to join us. And, you know, you guys were watching everything at Oaklawn. And, you know, the wet track obviously skews things slightly. But it sure felt like, you know, considering that virtually all the stake winners, were fairly formful. Kamari, I haven't mentioned her yet. She was terrific in that Spring Fever, and she, you know, yeah. Rosario had her out pretty much in the five path all the way around, and Larry Jones's filly as well, and the Dixie Belle was good.
Windmill was very good.
Definitely,
they did a great job for the weather they've had down there to have the track in as good a shape as they did. Fairly remarkable, you know, and weather that they don't normally have to deal with as far as, you know, the snow and all that. But the, you know, you definitely had an outside flow. You wanted to be out towards the middle of the track, and guys caught on to that pretty quick. But, just some sensational races. You got to be really, you know, excited about what you saw from Central Quality. Jackie's Warrior, you know, I think a little bit disappointing, but I think maybe, around one turn, more sprinter type, we're going to see the best of him. You know, we'll make him the early book favorite for the Alan Jerkins in Saratoga, right?
I thought that too. That was kind of my, my feeling. I said that yesterday with Seth Merrow. The wet track, again, the wet track, I mean, there's no reason why, it's one thing if you're sitting behind horses and are taking mouthfuls of mud and getting, you know, clobs hitting you in the forehead. But it's different, you know, when you're out there winging. This was not a great, return.
To be fair, maybe he didn't handle the going. You kind of just get that feeling, though, that maybe as brilliant as he was as a two-year-old flaunting that speed, that, you know, maybe that's really what he wants. And if anybody will figure it out, Steve Asmussen will. I mean, the guy wins races, you know, he's going to be the all-time leading trainer probably by the end of this year, you would think. And, you know, he's done it at the highest level, too. You know, I know we're going to have to wrap up quick. So on a personal note, I don't know if you saw, my son Joseph opened his own bloodstock agency.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he's down in Florida right now because they have a bunch of two-year-olds that he bought for people over last year, watching them train. He actually has one of his own down there that he sent me the video that, I'd be honest with you, I'm very excited about. We were at Timonium, the Fasig Tipton Timonium sale last fall, and he really liked this colt. His pedigree's escaping me at the moment. And he said, "Dad, I'm going to buy this horse." And he goes, "And I'm, you know, I'll keep a good portion of him, but I have, you know, guys I went to school with, college and stuff that, you know, want a piece of a horse, and I'll, you know, sell my friends a piece." And I think he kept 25%. And I told him then, if you, you know, don't get that done, I'll take half of them. But he got it done, and it's a bunch of his buddies that are all, you know, they're all like 30 years old now, and they're doing well. And he sent me a video of this colt. He looks like a three-year-old, and this is a young two-year-old, and galloped on his own with his head bowed, focused. I mean, I'm really, really excited about that for him. But he flew into West Palm Beach. He went and watched Faya train, who he had recommended Rob Masiello buy-in, and then he's won three in a row. And some other horses they had at Palm Meadows. Took Gabrielle out to dinner because she's down in West Palm working with show horses. Then he drove up to Ocala, worked there, and then he was at Gulfstream Saturday, but I think he's back in Ocala now. So he's, you know, he had a wonderful experience working for West Point. You know, he and Terry Finley, they parted on the best of terms. Joey, you know, has some ambition, wants to get his own thing going, and he's got a nice client roster, a lot of nice people that you know, he'll be buying horses for at all these two-year-old training sales.
Excellent. You know, it's funny. I'm glad you fleshed this out because I did notice, that that his moniker on Twitter changed to Mig Bloodstock. And it sort of caught my eye for a second. I didn't think a whole lot of it at the moment. Now I see that it's, yeah, I mean, officially Mig Bloodstock. So, they're good for him. I didn't know that Joey was a New Year's Day baby.
Yeah, he turns a year older with the thoroughbreds every year.
That's funny.
It was really funny too, because that was the one year in New York, you know, since the advent of winter racing, that it fell on a Tuesday, New Year's Day, and they just left it a dark day. Which, you know, is very unusual. Usually they always race on New Year's Day. That year, it was a scheduled dark day. They left it as a dark day. So I woke up at like 6 in the morning, and Carmella was in bed, and I went to the bathroom, and she was there, dressed, ready. She had showered. She had been in labor since like 2 in the morning, didn't want to wake me up. And I'm like, you know, first time, like, you're panicking. We got to go. Like, and she's like, no, I don't want to be, you know, one of these women that go to the hospital and are there for, you know, 24 hours before you have your baby. And finally, about 9 o'clock in the morning, the contractions are coming 5 minutes apart, and I'm freaking out. And we called the doctor, and he said, okay, head over to the hospital. Nobody's on the road New Year's morning. We went down Stewart Avenue to Winthrop Hospital. She had him at 11:15 in the morning. She was like, I was panicking, and she was like cool as a cucumber. It was crazy.
I love it.
And she's helping Joey with all the pedigrees. Yeah, with because that's Carmella's strong suit. You know, my wife probably bets 3 times a year, and she never loses. And she has this pedigree line that's become a bit more obscure, but she follows it. And anytime she finds a horse that has this, and I'm not going to do it justice, but it is some sort of a nick that she follows, she'll bet on that horse, and they win. One year in Saratoga, there was a horse came in from Suffolk, and this horse had that pedigree. He was running the maiden race, shipped in from Suffolk. She calls me, hey, go see that guy, see if you can get on that horse. I was like, he already got a jockey from Suffolk named. I don't know the guy. I'm going to go ask to ride a horse from Suffolk down. She bet on the horse. She bet what he won. Paid $125.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
So, you know, any of his pedigree queries you go through Carmella. So he's got a good assistant.
I love it. Well, best of luck to Joe. And I'm sure we'll catch up with him at a, you know, at a sale. I might go down in a couple of weeks to Ocala and broadcast the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, considering that. And I keep kind of wavering back and forth. And we'll get him on. We'll talk about his approach, and he's gonna. I can just see from what he's written already that whether it's picking out horses or racing management as well, an option. He'd be in good hands with Joe. Very cool, Richie. I appreciate it. There's always so much going on, but we'll we got a Gotham coming up on Saturday, and it's shaping up really well. In fact. I exchanged notes with Andrew Burns this morning to get a couple of, you know, confirmations. But Capo Kane, Freedom Fighter, highly motivated, wiped the slate. Looks like Safi Joseph is sending one, Irish Honor, or Awesome Jerry, Smiley Sabatka. And there's a chance that Callahan throws in Roman Centurion. And then there's a couple of others that...
I'm really looking forward to Capo Kane turning back the one-turn mile. I think it really suits him.
Nice. That's going to be a good. Yeah. It's going to be a good, good field and nice day too. There's should be a nice card. Looking at the conditions.
Yeah, it looks like the weather's going to be cooperating. It's supposed to get nice the rest of the week, right?
Sweet. That'd be great. Well, we're certainly looking forward to Glenn Kozak peeling the tarp off the grass, our first look at turf season can't come soon enough after this winter.
I'm sure Kid Chocolate agrees with you.
exactly. We stole a main track win, and that was fine. You know, when your turf horse wins over the winter on the main, you count your blessings and you look forward to the grass coming back.
Absolutely. Well, good deal, and I look forward to seeing you. I might even see you down in Ocala.
Nice. There you go. Richard Migliori, everybody. Follow Rich. And America's Day at the Races back in regular rotation. We'll stay here because Mike Stidham is standing by, and we talked to Jimmy Bell earlier. So Mike, I got Jimmy on, and so he cleared the deck. I don't have to ask you any tough questions about Mystic Guide.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. I'm curious. What did Jimmy say? I haven't spoken to him today.
Well, he said that all options are open.
Right.
Yeah. So.
That's the way we left it yesterday, so I didn't know if anything had changed.
Well, and you know, we'll get your thoughts obviously on it, and you know what you might, you know what you, if you think going to Maidan is, a unique challenge, or you know, if it's just appropriate given what we saw from him on Saturday, and first and foremost. And that's another 24 hours, 48 hours since the race. You know, wet track, not an ideal scenario, and really a loose track, too. Came back fine?
He came back great. He's actually traveling back today to the fairgrounds.
Nice.
But as of yesterday, he was dragging me around the shed row, so.
Well, we kind of talked about, what a good story this is, you know, especially for people that are frustrated, Michael, when it comes to the three-year-olds leaving the scene, you know, and not staying on to become handicap division horses. And he was late starting. I mean, we talked about him after the Jim Dandy win. He's pretty much never run a bad race, essentially. Talk about his development from your standpoint, starting with, the early work back last winter.
Well, look, this horse, he came in to us a little bit late. From Godolphin, nothing major, but just little immaturity issues that slowed him down. And then when we got him, he came out running because we ran him three quarters his first start of his life. and he ran well there and then came right back to win by five. But then, you know, as the year progressed and COVID started, and then there were all these question marks about, you know, where do you go? Do you now, because the Kentucky Derby was going to be run in September, you know, now do we have a chance to make the Derby? And, you know, all those options and temptations were out there. But so we were watching this horse and we just felt like, you know, he was maybe a step behind the horses that were getting ready for the Derby. And we just felt like pressing on him to try to make the Derby in Derby preps was not necessarily the thing to do. So, you know, we were patient. Jimmy and Dan Pride were, you know, all on board with just slowing down, taking our time, and letting the horse develop through the year. And that's what we did. And that plan seems to, obviously, the way he came out as a four-year-old, that plan seems to have paid off very well.
You know, I brought up Music Note with Jimmy because as wonderful as good Ghostzapper is as a stallion and what he brings to the party, and in a lot of ways he's actually not dissimilar from Music Note, but you know, Music Note was you know, pretty magical from 7/8, you know, to a mile and an eighth, and even I think she was second in a great, was it Music Note? In that terrific Alabama against Proud Spell, as it happens. And I'm pretty sure she was. So up to a mile and a quarter. And he reminds me of her as much as he does Ghost Zapper.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, but we were stabled in Larry Jones's barn at Oaklawn this week. And Larry was reminiscing on Music Note and Proud Spell running against each other. And bringing up Music Note was a little bit of a sore subject with Larry because, you know, she was the one that he was running against. And I think Music Note did beat her on an occasion. And, but it was interesting that we were in Larry's barn. He was talking about the mare. What a great racehorse she was.
It really was, and saw her a bunch of times. And it's funny, Tina spent a good part of yesterday going through stacks and stacks of photographs. She was loading one of those frames, a Pixar frame, with photographs, and she was kept handing me some to go through. And there happens to be, we spent a good part of Derby Day that year, I'm going to guess 2008, maybe. Was that 2008? And there's a couple of great pictures somebody took with our camera of Tina and me with Proud Spell. And
right.
She was terrific. Gosh, for Brary Jones. What you know? What were your thoughts going into Saturday coming back? And Jimmy said that you were reporting to him that he was just doing everything perfect on the comeback, you know, preparing for the seasonal debut.
He really was. And, you know, we never did, after his Jockey Club Gold Cup race, we never turned him out. We just kind of slowed down on him, gave him a couple of weeks of just walking, and then, you know, just slowly starting back with him. But he never did leave the racetrack. And, you know, that plan also worked out well because it wasn't like we were letting him down and having to bring him back. So he just got a little freshening from the weekly breezes. And then once we started working him again, you know, he just kept getting bigger and stronger and more mature looking. And we just, you know, it was like it was all coming together at the right time. And we felt really, really confident of the way he was going in. And I even made the comment to Jimmy, this horse is probably better now than he's ever been since I've had him. So it was a great way to go into the race. Then, you know, we get all the rain and the track was, you know, a sloppy mess to the point where they had to keep the tractors on the track, just kind of float the track and get as much water off as they can. And I must say that Oaklawn did a fantastic job to have the track in as good, you know, the best shape it could be in, considering the rain we had. And I did go back on Music Notes record to see, and I saw where she had handled, you know, wet tracks very well in her career. Mm-hmm. So that gave me a little bit of confidence that Mystic Guide would, you know, hopefully handle it too, and he obviously did.
Well, and the way in which he dispatched, and that was, you know, that was a group of solid, credentialed older horses, and so a great way to kick off the four-year-old season, and then to have that figure come back the way it did, a 108 buyer, so a new career high, obviously, and he starts to flirt, Michael, with, you know, with rarefied air these days. You know, you start getting 110 buyers. I mean, that's what you want from, you know, from your handicap horses.
Yeah, well, through my years of training, you know, over 40 years, I've kind of watched those big horses put up those big numbers and, you know, was always in awe of those kind of horses. And now to have one that, you know, is doing similar to that in my barn is really it's just unbelievable to have such a nice horse.
Yeah. Juxtapose the opportunities in your mind, and I'm sure you've thought about it here the last 48 hours, the chance to maybe, you know, win a you know, something like the Dubai World Cup, which could present itself, or, you know, staying the course and focusing on a domestic campaign this year that wouldn't involve a international travel and some of the things that, you know, that the perils that includes, some gut reactions.
You know, certainly the Dubai World Cup is, you know, an amazing race, and, you know, some of the best horses that have ever run have gone over there and run in that race and won it. So to even be considered to go over there is you know, flattering. We, you know, It's going to be a decision that's going to be made as a group, you know, with Jimmy Bell, Dan Pride, and, you know, Sheikh Mohammed, I'm sure, will be involved in the decision. So it's just something that we're going to really talk about. We're going to discuss our options if we don't go, and then if we do go. And it'll, like I say, it'll all be decided in the next couple of days.
Well,
it is a really good problem to have.
I guess either way. I mean, coming off of a performance like this, it does have to give you confidence about, you know, the potential to go over and be successful. So and not just be successful, but I mean, he'd be, you know, off of that effort. He's one of the favorites.
Yeah. No. It's. Like I say, it's an amazing position to be in, and we'll, like I say, we'll decide in the next few days which direction we're going to go in.
Well, we'll wait for that, and we'll see. We'll weigh those options, and in the meantime, Maxfield, for the barn itself, and in the care of Brendan Walsh, he's going to go try in California at the Big Cap. But Mystic Guide, super impressive. Luis Saez with a big day, and coming out. We'll see whatever happens next. It was a great day overall for Godolphin. That's why we called Jimmy, because essential quality and Antoinette as well. And, you know, we talked quite a bit of the barn, did a little bit of a barn tour with Jimmy, Michael. And you've actually got the Music Note 3-year-old as well back in New Orleans. Talk about Gershwin off the maiden win.
Yeah, well, Gershwin, he's another one that, you know, we had some little setbacks with him, slowed us down, but now he's in gear, and, you know, his first start, he kind of caught us off guard. We sprinted in because we really didn't have a good feel for what his best surface and distance was going to be. So we just sprinted him to get a race into him, let him learn a little something. And he broke out of the gate and, you know, actually shocked us by being on the lead. We didn't think he was quick enough to be on the lead sprinting. And he showed that first time out. And then, you know, was a little bit lost out on the lead, got caught late, and only got beat, a length and a half, something like that. And so off of that race, showing that kind of speed, rather than going long, I sprinted him back. And, you know, he sat in a stalking spot and then closed and finished up really well. So the plan with him is to run him in a 1X allowance at the fairgrounds, going a mile and a 16th on the dirt in his next start, and see what, you know, what kind of effort he puts in around two turns. But
interesting,
you know, very talented colt.
Nice. Well, and I suppose, you know, another, I think he got a 79 Beyer, breaking the maiden. And if he takes a step forward, I suppose you'd have to consider taking a swing somewhere, right, with a bluegrass or something as a opportunity?
Yeah, if he handles the two turns well, like I think he will, and, you know, runs the kind of numbers that makes him competitive in one of the, you know, derby preps, we'll be looking at a few different options, absolutely.
Excellent. Well, speaking of which, you know, you've got one lined up for the Louisiana Derby just a few weeks away now, and talk about Proxy coming out of the Risen Star.
I'll tell you what, Proxy is, he's one that has always been a little bit immature mentally. You know, you can see in his two allowance wins where he broke his maiden and won the 1X. He was kind of looking in horses and doing a little drifting through the stretch in and out. I didn't want to put blinkers on him after his maiden win off of a win. So I felt like, you know what, let's let him just learn on his own. Let's not close him up yet. Let's see if he'll just straighten himself up. And when we ran him back in the LeCompte, and he was second in the LeCompte, you know, I still felt like, you know, let this horse develop, you know, give him a chance to develop. Ran him back at the Risen Star. And again, Johnny Velasquez, who was riding him for the first time, you know, came back to me. He says, Mike, he goes, I can't explain what happened passing the half mile pole. He said, third in a beautiful position. And the horse just dropped the bit like he was not interested in. And I had to kind of give him some reminders, get after him a little bit. And he said when I did that, he kicked back into gear, and he was closing all the way through the stretch to be second in that race. So based on that, based on the drifting in the allowance races, we felt like, okay, now we've got to take a step forward with him as far as putting the blinkers on him and see if we can't get him to run, you know, a little more consistent, stay, you know, in contention through the whole race and run straighter. And we worked him in blinkers the other morning, and it was very impressive. He worked a half in 47, sat off another horse, and came to the horse through the stretch and, you know, galloped out real strong. So I felt like his first work with blinkers was very positive. And the plan will be to run him in the Louisiana Derby with blinkers on.
Excellent. Well, tell you what, things haven't even gotten to a couple of other personal favorites, and I can tell things are going awfully nice for Team Stidham. Let's ask about a couple like Pixelate. Tried him in the Pegasus, and I see that he worked yesterday. What's next for him?
Well, we're looking at the Mervyn Munez that runs on March 20th at the fairgrounds. It's a mile and an eighth on the turf. It's a grade two, and you know, we've just, you've given him a little breather since the Pegasus. He's training really well, and I think he'll fit beautifully in that race going a mile and an eighth. So that's the plan, March 20th.
Nice. Pixelate for the Muniz, and one that I'm not even sure, I don't even know where things stand. Is Princess Grace, is she
Princess
okay?
Princess Grace is back in training. We just gave her a little freshening. We gave her 60 days in Ocala. She's back at Tampa with my assistant there, Ben Trask, and she actually worked over the weekend, and she's, you know, we're getting her ready for a spring and summer campaign, and we're excited about getting her back, too.
Oh, good. All right, because I wasn't sure if she, you know, if she had, you know, what her status was. Nice. Michael, while I got you, I'm going to ask a more vexing question. You spent plenty of time in Chicago, and your thoughts on what looks like a very difficult situation ahead regarding Arlington?
That situation is one of the most disappointing and sad situations that I've been involved in my entire career. You know, it's a shame that Churchill Downs, and I don't want to, you know, be saying too many things out of line, but it's a shame that Churchill Downs has that little respect for racing. To be Arlington Park is like what would be considered a national monument for racing. And for them to tear it down is like tearing down, you know, Mount Rushmore, you know, for us in racing. It's not right. It's not right for the horsemen in Illinois. It's not right for the tradition that Arlington has for, I don't know how many years, 80 years or more, the top horses that race there, and for it to just be, you know, that beautiful structure that Mr. Dutchessois built there to be just ripped down, and I just can't say enough about how disappointed I am in Churchill Downs.
Well, I knew having a visit with you, I had to bring up Chicago. You know, it's a big part of your you know, your life, the family's life, and your career, and I knew you'd want to address it.
Yeah, we had many, many good summers there, won many, many of the big races, and, you know, it was always just a place that we look forward to going to in the summer. The surface, the turf course was state-of-the-art, you know, multiple lanes of turf racing that they could. You always were running on a beautifully manicured turf course, and then, you know, even the synthetic track. I know there were a lot of people that didn't like the synthetic, but we loved training our young horses on the synthetic. It was a safer surface to keep them sound and get them to the races. So, again, just more disappointment that there won't be any more Arlington Park.
Mike Stidham, everybody. You can follow Mike on Twitter, Stidham Racing, and a very nice, there's probably another four or five horses I could bring up, but between Mystic Guides, splashy and flashy return to action, Proxy coming up, Gershwin, Princess Grace, Pixelate, and a lot more. Michael, thank you so much, and good luck no matter what the decision is, and we'll see you potentially in New Orleans. Along the way soon.
Sounds great, Steve. Thanks so much for having me on. I always enjoy being on your show.
Always love having you. Mike Stidham, everybody, and Mystic Guide really announced himself for the handicap side of things. Let's take the break here. We need a break, and we'll come back and sprint to the wire with, Mark Cassie, and we're going to slip in James Scully, and we're supposed to visit with Papo, too. So not a lot of time and a lot to do. Back after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
And